Good evening. I was telling the brethren here that we were really impressed at Pleasant Hill how organized they were. Bob Urbina called me, I think it was last February in 2014. He said, "What do you got planned for 2015? I said, "Man, I don't know." And he said, "Would you like to hold a gospel meeting?" I said, "Well, let me check my calendar." And it was wide open, so I was happy to do it. And I'm really thankful that that the brethren here thought of me in this regard. So to be here is, in my mind, at least an honor to be able to stand before the brethren here and preach this material. I think this is a pretty important subject. It's always relevant, isn't it? Marriage and the family. What a subject that is relevant at all times, especially today, as we begin to see a real attitude shift in our country about marriage and the family. It's not viewed, as the Bible calls it, an honorable institution. I don't know that it's really viewed that way anymore, yet it still is an honorable institution. And yet it's been carried through the mud over recent days in a lot of different ways, even trying to change the very definition of what marriage is between one man and one woman for life. Until death do you part. I got an email from one of the brethren here. Was that you that emailed me? Somebody emailed me here and said I was missing a topic for my lessons. I said, "No, Friday through Sunday, I got it. I gave them all to you." He goes, "Well, we wanted Thursday too." And so I said, "Okay. Well, I had a year to prepare, and I know that I missed one." But I said, this would be a good opportunity tonight to really kind of give an overview of God's idea of marriage. And really take a look at what has gone on in our own nation with regard to the attitude and disposition towards marriage. What is the purpose of marriage? Why did God create marriage anyways? Well, after he created man, he surveyed the situation from heaven and said, this is not a good situation that man should be alone. And so to resolve loneliness, God created for him a woman. Obviously, Adam, as he was naming all the creatures on the planet, he could see that everybody had somebody but him. And so God saw that situation was not good. And so marriage was created to remedy the problem of self-completion. Man without woman is not complete. Neither is woman complete without the man. And so God, men and women, are the perfect complement of each other. So from the divine perspective, man needed someone. And he gave woman to him. So marriage is the natural place where you're going to find love. And that's where God placed love, to be in that home, in that family environment. The Bible gives the word love in our English translations, but there's several words that are translated as love in English. First, there is the word agapao, and of course we know that as unconditional love. And then there is the word phileo. Both are translated love, but they have two different ideas. Agapao means the will to do good towards. This kind of love can be known from the action that it promotes. In other words, it's not instinctual. It's one of the mind and of the intellect. I would say that this kind of love is the stabilizing force of a marriage. That means that I need to develop agape love in my marriage. That is the kind of love that will be satisfied with only the good for my spouse. When I'm tired and irritated and anxious, I'll still have the kind of love that demonstrates for my spouse what's best for that individual. And that's agape love. Again, as I said, it's not instinctual. Phileo love is more instinctual. And it's the love that involves tender affection. Both of these are extremely important in a marriage. Naturally, coming out of that, marriage is the proper place for the procreation of the human race. Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. The Lord said, "Go, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it." And so marriage is the proper place for physical love. Now, I'll say this. When we talk about love, we talk about phileo love. We also talk about agape love. Both of those kinds of love are not just reserved for mom and dad. It's reserved for all the people in that environment, in that institution. Which means that as we raise children, aren't they learning something from the type of love that we share with one another? Absolutely. They're learning from the situation they see in mom and dad. This is extremely important because God had a design in mind for the home. And so to increase the number of the saved is another reason why God created marriage. Brother Jackson, not this one, the other one down in Stockton right now, he said marriage was intended to create the ideal domestic environment where the gospel of Christ could have its best opportunity for success. I think about what God's intention for Israel was. God had a desire to bless Israel. He chose down to the very location of where he was going to have them, in that Fertile Crescent there. Right there where Palestine is, that was the hub of the entire ancient world. And what was God's intent for them? To bless them. But not just to bless them, but so that everyone who passes through this little territory would see the wonderfulness of God. I believe that that's what the home is supposed to be today. The home, particularly the Christian home, is supposed to be the hub where everyone can see the blessings of God, where everyone can see God's intent for man. And find true happiness. And so in that regard, marriage, that is marriage and the family, was designed to really increase the amount of saved. It was designed to help facilitate the saving of people's souls. And then I would say this, that there's a spiritual component to marriage and the family as well, a theological purpose. And that is to understand, I think, the relationship between Christ and the church. Earl Edwards once told me, he said, I think it's difficult for someone who has never been married and who has never had children to truly understand in a real intimate way the love that Christ had for the church. And that's why Ephesians chapter 4 compares the love of Christ to the church. And so these are some of the reasons why God created the home. They're extremely important. And they have a huge impact, not only on our society, but they have a huge impact on the home. Now let me get into the thoughts that I have here. I picked up a lectureship book, and I opened it up and I saw an article by Thomas B. Warren. I said, oh, I got to read that. The title's what caught my attention, really. The title was this, The Significance of I Do. And I thought, wow, okay. The significance of I do. In that article, he lamented the fact that so many people have failed to see the significance of the wedding vows. He went through and he talked about the wedding vows and all of that. And I think that he hit on something that's absolutely true. Something that I think moms and dads in the home need to make sure that we implant in the minds of our young people. If marriage is designed to facilitate and help fulfill God's plan for saving souls, then those wedding vows are extremely important. And when they're not taken seriously, then it's going to have an impact on the church. And I think that we're seeing that impact today. I think a lot of young people and even adults see marriage sometimes as just another role that they play in life. There are a lot of roles that we occupy in life. There's the religious role, which we occupy in the church. Political, which we occupy in the community. Economic, in the corporation. Marriage, in the family. But I think that it's not just a role that we occupy. And if we see that, we better tweak our thinking of marriage. Because we're really not viewing it in the right way. Take a job, for example. I guess the most revealing question that in most people's minds is, what do you do for a living? Everybody wants to know, hey, what do you do? What do you do? Well, I take that to mean, what's your occupation? What occupies most of your time? You take an occupation, a job, 40 hours a week, spanning over a career of about 40 or 50 years. And so that question, what do you do, in many people's mind is a revealing question. Now, you ask a woman, what do you do? Oh, I'm just a housewife. Which is what we've reduced, I think, being a housewife to. Oh, I'm just a housewife. But that occupies the majority, if not all, of her life. Is that not a revealing question? Oh, you're a housewife. That should tell you everything you need to know about that individual. And yet, we have depreciated that role, which is probably the most important role in society. We've depreciated that. Even myself, I'm always challenged when people ask me, hey, what is it that you do? Well, what should I say? I know what they're getting at. They want to know, well, what's your occupation? Well, shall I say a railroader? Because I work for the Union Pacific Railroad. I've been working all the live long day. Or should I say preacher? But really, both of those roles are a means to an end. They're designed to help me be the best husband and father that I can be. That's what my job does. I have a job so that I can obey the other command that God gave me, was to take care of my family. That's why I have a job. That's the role that it occupies in my life, to be the very best husband, the very best father, is what it helps me to do. So I'm always challenged when people ask me, well, what do you do? Well, I'm a dad. I'm a husband. That's what I do. And that's really what I ought to be about. Marriage means something very special because it's so different than everything else that we do. There's nothing in our lives that's like marriage. And as in our jobs, marriage has a product, doesn't it? What's the product of marriage? Now, a lot of people will think, well, when you think about the product of marriage, you think, well, it's children. Well, yes, that's true. But the emphasis is not on reproduction. And I think that the emphasis, at least I think it ought to be, is on relationships. You think about what you're building in your family. You're building relationships. And really, I think that was God's plan, God's intent. To have a home where relationships can be developed, where relationships can be grown, and then to take that out into the world and save people's souls because you know how to have relationships with you. What is the church? It's a bunch of people who are in a close-knit community who have relationships with each other. That's God's plan for the development of the mind. For long-term success of teaching young people, this is how you get through this life. Obedient to God. That's the design of the Christian home. Over the past several decades, more, 50, 60 years, I suppose, there's been a steady chiseling away at marriage and the family. A concerted effort really to destroy God's design for humanity. Because when you destroy the marriage, when you destroy the concept of marriage and the family, at least the biblical home, you really are destroying God's intent for the world. So for several decades, there's been this chiseling away. Now, one of the things that we've seen, that there's been a gap between the values of men and women, and over the last several decades, it's been narrowing. What I mean by that is, with more and more women who have entered into the workforce, which that's not a surprise, right? That's been happening for decades now. But you're having them be less home-oriented, aren't you? So women enter the workforce, they become less home-oriented. Today, I think we see just really a small segment of the problem with marriage and the family. And I think we see that in the divorce rate, right? 50%. 50% is the divorce. But that's only part of the story. That's not the entire picture. It's much worse than just the 50% divorce rate that we're seeing. It goes beyond that. There was a survey that was conducted in the 1950s. And the survey asked graduating students coming out of colleges, what do you anticipate is going to be the greatest source of satisfaction once you go into the world? This is from the 50s. Now, listen. 60% of men said family relationships. Oh, that's great. When you compare it to today, that's wonderful. 87% of women said family relationships. Only 31% of men thought that they would find the greatest degree of satisfaction in their work. And only 6% of women thought they would find satisfaction in the workforce. And even fewer thought it would be in leisure time and activities. But that's not true today. Today, according to the U.S. Commerce Census, today we are seeing more divorces, but here's the real troubling issue, and less marriages. So we're not really seeing the big picture. 50% divorce rate, that's bad enough, but less people are wanting to get married at all. They're opting out altogether of marriage. In 1960, 72% of all people ages 18 and older were married. 72%. Look at that number today. Only 51% of all people ages 18 and over are married. A lot of people are opting out of marriage altogether. It's not in their vision anymore. They don't see that as a source of satisfaction, as a source of happiness. So many couples are opting out of marriage, and the ones that do get married, only about 50% make it. Don't you know that that's impacting the church? It most definitely is. Today, divorce is all too often an occurrence, and this is proving to be something of an enigma to the church. We're not sure, how do we handle this situation? Well, I think meetings like this are extremely important. If we can get young people in the door, we don't have a problem getting the older folks in here, but we need some young people in the door listening to lessons like this. As marriage has been beaten by previous generations, what was the old view of marriage? Well, in generations, I'm not talking about the 50s where everybody seemed to have a pretty positive attitude towards marriage, but in just a couple 20 years ago, people were seeing marriage as a short-term love affair. I can't remember if I heard this in a lesson or if I was watching TV and heard this, but a woman was asked the question, "What do you see in your future?" She was young, she was just starting out in life. And she said, "Well, I think that I'll probably, you know, fall in love, meet somebody, fall in love, get married, probably stay married for about 7 years, and then I'll get into my career and focus on that." But that just struck me as surprising. The cavalier attitude towards marriage was that, hey, it's just a short-term love affair. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. Out with the old and in with the new. Compare that to today, where there is actually the attitude towards marriage that, you know, it's really a burden and it's not necessary. Which is why we're seeing the rate of people who want to get married shrinking. And so we're seeing more and more people just living in sin. Well, what does that create? Well, the consequences of an attitude against the family like that, it's devastating to society. And I think we can see the outcome of that. But it's also devastating to the church. Not only are we finding more and more people living in sin, but the product of the home is missing. And what was the product of the home? Well, the product of a home was children who have learned how to engage in personal relationships. Well, now we're finding dysfunctional adults in their place, who don't know how to have a relationship, who are dysfunctional in almost every area of their life. Do you suppose that's going to have an impact on the church? Oh man, it is having an impact on the church. You go and you take a look at churches all around the country. We're missing a large section of young people. Why is that? Well, I think it's because of this problem. This is the true enigma of divorce and remarriage. The true enigma of divorce and remarriage is that it creates dysfunctional people. And it makes it much more difficult to take somebody who's so dysfunctional in their life, who haven't learned the good lessons of the marriage and a family to learn the issues of love, how to be devoted to one person. You think about this. Which one of us, if we got a call from a family member, wouldn't drop everything and go tend to whatever emergency might happen? Well, we'd all drop everything and we'd run. This is what you learn in the home. And you translate this over into the church and into other personal relationships. That's what marriage and the family teaches young people. So what is the essence of marriage then? The essence of marriage, I think according to many people, I think most people get like bits and pieces of the essence of marriage. Personal relationship, that's what marriage is. Well, I would agree that involves personal relationship, but that's not the essence of a marriage. When you think of it as a personal relationship, you kind of put it in the category of a friendship then, don't you? Well, you have all kinds of personal relationships. It's an intense face-to-face contact that develops strong feelings. Sometimes positive, sometimes negative. Marriage is more than a personal relationship. To many, marriage has become a contract. That's an important idea there. Marriage is a contract. In that way, people do see marriage as a commitment. But marriage is more than just a personal relationship. Marriage is more than just a commitment. But what are the characteristics that define marriage? This seems to be kind of some strange questions, right? Well, marriage, what do you mean? Marriage. Well, we're looking for the biblical definition of marriage. What is a marriage that is pleasing to God? Modern sociologists would have us believe that really the origin of marriage is beyond human comprehension. It's their unbelief that has led them to claim ignorant. And as a result, they've kind of sailed the seas of complete and utter speculation about marriage. They have no real answers for people, which is why we see so many dysfunctional marriages in our world. Marriage did not begin as an experiment by a couple of consenting adults. That's not how marriage began. It was not a trial and error arrangement until somebody became dissatisfied. Marriage existed in the mind of God long before it became a reality in the hearts and minds of humans. God had it in His mind. And so marriage is extremely important. God looked down at the situation, saw man down there by himself, and said, "Oh, this isn't good. We've got to do something." And so He created woman. "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife." Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. God created marriage, and He's the one who defines marriage. He's the one who governs marriage. That means that no marriage can be legal which is not pleasing to God. Do you understand what I just said? No marriage can be legal, that is, divine law, that is not pleasing to God. It doesn't matter what the government says. It doesn't matter what I say or what you say. It only matters what God said. Abraham Lincoln said, "Suppose you called a tail a leg. How many legs would a dog have?" Somebody says, "Five." He says, "No." Because just calling something a leg doesn't make it a leg. A tail is going to be a tail. You can call it whatever you want, but it's still a tail. And you can call marriage whatever you want, but God has set the parameters for marriage. God has defined marriage. Solomon married, the Bible says, strange women. They called these women his wives. 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. But you know what Nehemiah said? Nehemiah chapter 13 said that in all these things Solomon sinned. And then he called upon the people of his day, the men of his day, to put away their foreign wives. That was a sin. And so this language that is sometimes used when you read married or you read wives, it's used to accommodate the human mind. But it's not condoning those kinds of marriages. The Bible's full of these kinds of examples. Matthew comments on Herod, who had taken his brother's wife. And John went about preaching, saying, "Hey, it's not lawful for you to have her." J. H. Thayer says to have her means to take a woman, to have her means to use her as a wife unlawfully. And so it says that he married her, but God saw it as sin. Civil government may recognize same-sex marriage. Civil government may even recognize adulterous marriage, but God doesn't, and God never will. Since God created marriage, it's important, I think, to understand what kind of relationship marriage is. It is a commitment. Marriage, in some regards, I guess, is a contract. Marriage is a union. It's a relationship. The best concept that describes marriage, I think, is the concept of a covenant. And that, to me, seems to be the most comprehensive idea of what marriage is. A covenant is between a couple and God. Man and woman decide to be married. They make a commitment before God. This is a covenant relationship. There has never been a legitimate marriage that did not involve God. It is possible, let me say this is really important, it's possible to have a divinely approved marriage that is not pleasing to God. I think we find brethren in the church that have the legal right to be married. God recognizes their marriage, but their relationship is not what God wants. He's not pleased with the way they conduct themselves. I think you can have Christians in that same situation, right? You can have marriages in a situation where God recognizes you have the right to be together, and I recognize you're married, but this is not pleasing to me. The question, how do we make our marriages pleasing to God? Not just legitimate, but make God happy and make Him smile upon us. In such instances, I think couples actually live beneath their privileges. It's the intent of God that marriage grows out of a heart of love and continued to thrive upon hearts of love. And yet, when love grows cold, the marriage hasn't ended. The marriage still remains. Many of us fail to meet the standard that God has set for our homes. As a result, we feel justified, I think, in treating our marriage more like a contract. Now, a contract says this: well, I'm going to give something, and then I'm going to get something in return, right? That's what a contract is. You give something, you get something in return. If you fail to deliver, then the contract becomes void. Well, hey, you broke the contract. We're done here, right? The contract marriage system only makes matters worse. Let me give you, I've had so many people come into my office there at Pleasant Hill and want to talk about their marriages. And it's so frustrating sometimes because here's what's happened. They're using their marriage as a contract system. And so when one person doesn't deliver the needs and the comforts that the other person wants, well, that person feels like, okay, well, then I'm going to withhold something. And that's going to be my subtle way of telling that person I want more. Well, what that person does then is they say, well, now, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? Now I'm going to withhold something. And guess what? It spirals until it becomes a real devastation in your marriage. And you're fighting and you're bickering. And then when you go down to sit with the preacher, there's about 100 things going on in your marriage. And he's got to go, okay, let's go back about 100 years and let's find out how this all began. That's the problem with treating your marriage like it's a contract instead of like it's a covenant. A marriage is a covenant. The covenant says this: I promise to always act a certain way, even when you fail to act that way. I must still act according to my vows. It's an unconditional promise. That's what the covenant is. A covenant is an unconditional binding promise between two people and their God. And that's why you say it in front of a bunch of people. So they come later on and say, hey, I heard you. What are you doing? Why are you acting this way? You got witnesses. The vows associated with the marriage covenant strive to always be loving, to always meet the physical and emotional needs of the other person until the day that I die. My job is never over until death do us part.
the covenant system.
The covenant, the marriage covenant, is not dependent upon perfection. This is why the wife is called upon to submit yourself to the Lord, or to your husband, as unto the Lord. It doesn't require perfection, but our very best, our very heart effort. And the husband is called upon to love your wife as Christ loved the church. The very best effort that you can give to her, she deserves. When you think about in our society of independence, now what's the greatest document in our land? The Declaration of Independence, right? Hey, I'm independent. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. And we value that. I value that, and I know that you do. But in our society of independence, this seems incredibly unfair. Who would be so noble as to always be loving and caring and gentle and deliver everything of themselves when they're not getting that in return? The husband will, or the wife will. And if both do their best to meet their promise, then guess what? You're going to have two people, though they have their moments, who will always be striving for the other's best interest. That's the plan of God. A covenant is really not very common in our society because of we value so highly individualism. The marriage covenant does not protect the individual. Now you think about that. If it did, it wouldn't be saying, I promise to always love you, care for you, all these things. It values most the institution. That's what the marriage covenant values, is the institution that God has put in place. Why? Because when you think about the marriage covenant, it's the very best system for two people who have integrated their lives. Who have integrated their lives physically, emotionally, spiritually, economically, and with children. The institution itself becomes the most valued thing that you have. And that's what the vow is designed to do, to protect that institution. And that is the significance of I do. How many of our young people, how many of us when we engaged in marriage ourselves really thought that through? The significance of I do, oh man, it is all encompassing. The totality of your existence, your life, it requires. And we need to be teaching that to young people. And teaching them the biblical definition of what God has created. Marriage and the family. The significance of what you're about to enter into. And guess what? Today, as we sit here ourselves, we need to think about the significance of what we've committed ourselves to. And this is the foundation, I think, that we want to build on over the next few days. As we take a look tomorrow night as the contemporary attacks on the home and family. They are wreaking havoc in society, but they're having a huge devastation upon the church as well. As we have people who are dysfunctional coming into church and we're trying to solve problems. We're trying to help people be obedient and get to heaven. And when the home fails, the church suffers. We're losing leaders as a result of losing homes. How do we change this around? Well, this is the best way. Teaching. Parents doing their job. The church doing its job. Thank you so much for your attention tonight. Tomorrow night we're going to pick up on some of these same thoughts. We do want to take the opportunity right now to extend the invitation of our Lord. Perhaps you're here tonight because your marriage hasn't been what it should have been. Perhaps you're here tonight because you want to grow in that way. If you're subject to the invitation, we encourage you to come tonight repenting and praying. If you're a child of God and you've come here because I just haven't been living my life right, well, the invitation is for you as well. Perhaps there's some other need that we can accommodate for you. If you are subject to the invitation, we encourage you to come right now while together we stand and sing.